Netcasting from Chicago, Los Angeles, and Sydney, you're listening to this week's FX Podcast from FXGuide.com.
Hi, welcome to this week's FX Podcast. I'm John Montgomery. Thanks for downloading our podcast this week. It's a week before IBC, and I know a lot of our European listeners and my artist friends are going to be heading up to Amsterdam for that. FX Guide will be providing coverage from the show floor as much as we can, provided our access to the internet. So be sure to look forward to that this weekend and early next week. We'll also be trying to do some podcast interviews as well from Amsterdam. We're entering our second week as well on our FX PhD sister site. That's a site that provides online visual effects training, and we're really quite excited about it. If you haven't checked out the site, be sure to check out the story on the FX Guide homepage, as well as fxphd.com. And if you have any questions, drop us a line. We'd really love to have you involved. It's great. We have students from over 70 countries around the world, and the second term just promises to be even bigger than the first. Well, one company that's getting ready this week for IBC is Chrome Imaging. They're the makers of the Matrix Compositing System. It's really quite an interesting system. It provides color correction, providing real-time 4K interactivity for color correction and grading. It provides a built-in compositing and effects system, a nonlinear node-based workflow that allows you to support multiple color depths up to 32-bit, and also provides a paint system. It's really quite an interesting system. So in order to find out more about it, this week Mike Seymour is talking to Dan Tattoo, who's the CEO of Chrome Imaging. So why don't we go ahead and join that discussion that Mike had with Dan Tattoo. Mike?
So thanks for that, John. And yes, I have Dan on the line right now from Switzerland, and I believe it's quite sunny over there in Switzerland. How are you, Dan?
Hi, I'm fine. Yes, it's very sunny here. It's hot again, but unfortunately we have to prepare for the IBC, so we're all in the office here working.
Now just give us a quick background. Where'd the product come from? Where's the company from? What's the history?
Well, the company started in 1998, and our first appearance was at the IBC in 2000, and probably a couple of your readers will remember our company and logo from then. We initially had a product called Photonics, and that was a matte painting application running on Windows. And at that time, we decided to move a bit more into the movie industry and came with the first version of Matrix Compositing, which was software only at that time. And that lasted for 2 years, and probably right after that in 2002, you remember, the industry wasn't doing that well, and a lot of companies went out of business, and we sat down and asked ourselves if we shouldn't do anything about it, and we decided at that time to re-engineer the product to meet the new demands for real-time HD and obviously this new trend, which is DI and handling 2K and 4K files in real-time.
So I guess that begs the question, is this a compositing package first and foremost, or is it a DI package?
Well, the name says compositing because that's legacy, and we may have the name change in the next month. Right now it's a full-featured DI package. It's got editing, it's got compositing, of course, but also all the color correction tools you may need to fully finish a DI project. So it went a bit further than just compositing. It really is a finishing tool for digital intermediates.
In fact, it actually goes further than just having those tools. There's actually controls that relate in the color correcting world to the Telecine, don't they?
Yeah, you can connect the system to Telecine, obviously to a VTR as well, should be HD or SD, and also to a couple of scanners that are available on the market. So through different types of links, you can either use SDI links, either single or dual links, and also HSDL from now on, from the IBC on, you should be able to connect that through HSDL to a couple of scanners available on the market, such as the Sintel ones, for example.
So, in fact, if I had it connected to a Telecine, I'd have focus, zoom, gamma, to be very clear about it, what could I control on the Telecine other than obviously the transport?
Well, that's definitely true. Actually, at IBC, we'll have a presence on CTM Debris' booth, which is a French company that manufactures Telecine, and there we can show to visitors those functionalities such as zoom control and focus and obviously, you know, lamp control of the Telecine. So that's like before the actual digital grading starts. It's really controlling the components of the Telecine machine.
Now, let's just set the picture for those people that don't know the product yet. The panel, is that standard, the color-correcting panel with the balls, or is that an optional extra? What's a basic system?
Yeah, there's no option at that level. It all comes with the panel, the graphic tablet. Everything is packed together because what we want is to give a tool that people just plug in and start working with it. So we definitely are not competing against a couple of other systems that just sell you different modules and options. We just give a tool that is fully featured to people, and they don't have to spend hours trying to find the best option or the best panel or the best graphic tablet. It's just given with the system, and they don't have to worry about anything else.
So basically a turnkey system that will allow a facility to get up and running in a DI workflow, and that workflow obviously encompasses other things, including, as you said, compositing. I'm going to move on to those other things in a second, but let's just stick with the film workflow and its hardcore state. In addition to being able to control the Telecine, there are quite advanced clip logging, scene detection kind of stuff going on in the on the front end, isn't there?
Yeah, definitely. There is a dedicated module to actually perform scene detection, which is very handy for film rolls that contain several takes of the same scene, and it helps a lot the colorist to prepare in advance the cut list or the EDLs by just scene detecting the shots and the raw data. And that's definitely included in the package. And also all the logging tools you may need, like importing and exporting EDLs, cut lists, and various formats for different scanners, or telecines such as the Flex files, for example. Yeah.
So the thing that hallmarks a DI system is the fact that the grading information, let's say I do a balance the blacks and the whites and I do a basic grade, that information is locked to the clip and not locked to an arbitrary point in a timeline that coincidentally seems to happen when there's a scene change. If you look at, say, a DaVinci 2K, that has an EDL of sorts that are the color decisions, and that doesn't actually link to the clip. Whereas, obviously, in the DI world, either in Resolve or Luster or whatever, those grading decisions are completely locked to the clip. Is that the model that you take?
Yeah, definitely. The color grading in Matrix is based on a B-roll timeline with transitions, so each element in the timeline is actually clipped with all its parameters and properties, and the color decisions are attached to the clip, so you can basically copy color decision from one clip to another and therefore match different shots from a single scene to have the same look and feel. And that's true. That's something that the DI world is bringing little by little to color correction. I'm sure it's going to happen for other systems as well, but it's definitely the way that people want to work today, because color correction, as it used to be, was mostly done in the Telecine room, and then you had color timing in the film labs, and now DI, it's like the moment where all these things are converging towards a more integrated tool, and also because of the experience the users have with editing systems and compositing systems, they like to have the same type of features. So definitely our color decision is based around this concept of having a timeline and a clip and clip properties and all these things.
So let me ask you two questions about the workflow. If you're in that paradigm, firstly, how do you accommodate changes as the edit changes? How do you sort of trace that back to obviously avoid having to do a full recon form?
Well, the media, it's stored in on the system, obviously, and that's what some would call the online media. And when you get changes in the EDL, there is just a simple button that you have to click and import the new EDL, and media is linked automatically to the new timeline. Now, obviously, if the new EDL is not referring to an existing clip in the system, you would have to import that or scan it or telescate whatever, but it's pretty automatic.
But then how does that, is it just then automatically apply color corrections? I'm interested in, not so much in the recon form, because that's relatively easy, but how you'd apply the metadata of the grade to that new conform. Or should I ask you this question first? Is there a render out of the color corrections, or is it a metadata that's happening on the fly? In other words, are you doing color correction on the fly with metadata, or is it a locked-in render?
All the color correction is done on the fly in real time to 2K resolutions and on the 4K system up to 4K resolution. Now, depending on your workflow, you may have to render, because when the data has to go to a film printer, for example, obviously the film printer is not a real-time device for now, so it needs to have like a bunch of files stored on a disk, so you have to render those files out and let the film printer do his job at 2 frames a second, probably. So in this type of workflow, you have to render your data. If you're just playing out the data on some VTR type of device, like the HDCam SR, for example, there's no rendering needed for that, and you just play out and color correction is applied in real time based on the metadata.
And so if I've got metadata on clips, in other words, let's say I've established a grade for close-ups and grades for the wide shots, and then new EDL comes in, is there any intelligent way of applying the looks that I've got for the close-ups and the wides to the new reconform, or is that still a manual process?
Actually, it's semi-automatic in the sense that the user have to follow a couple of rules, like not changing names of the clips and such things, because clips have to have some ID to be recognized by the engine. But as long as you follow these rules, it's pretty automatic. And as I said, if new clips are added into the timeline and that they were never used before, they would have to be manually linked.
Okay, so let's say that we're working with a offline editor and they're providing us with material. You mentioned EDLs already. OMF, what other standards are you working with?
Well, we're currently implementing AAF, and I could say that as long as you just import the timing of the clips, it's fine. Now, it takes a bit of time for us to make sure it works perfectly with other metadata coming from Avid or Final Cut, for example, because nobody really stores the metadata in the standard way. So, for example, importing transitions and effects and everything, it's not as easy as it seems, and it's the case for all the systems. But the basic timeline, it's important without any problems.
And Dan, what about an XML export from FCP? Have you looked at that?
Well, all our data inside the system is stored as XML, so there is no problem to export an XML for Final Cut or import it for Final Cut from Final Cut. Sorry, that's a very easy thing actually. Besides that, since everything is stored in XML, people can add their own metadata in the system, and it's managed as it was native metadata. So the system is pretty extensible, basically, to anything that a facility may want to add in there.
So if I was to stop there, I'd have a pretty good DI system, especially given the user interface on your color grading and the responsiveness of it. But now, as we alluded to earlier, it's got a full compositing package to boot, including paint and stuff, and titling. So I don't know where to start. Let's start with titling, because you have titling text, obviously. You also have subtitling modules, don't you?
Yes, we do have a subtitling module, which, as all the other modules, handles very well 8-bit, 10-bit, 16-bit, and even 32-bit floats. Rendering, so you can easily subtitle material for television, but also film. And regarding film subtitling, one of our clients is actually doing that every day as a job, and the quality, it's just amazing. We didn't expect to have such quality when projected on screen compared to laser subtitling, for example. The difference, it's totally amazing. It's a crystal clear text printed on the image, and that gives the viewer an experience which is way beyond what you could see with traditional laser subtitling.
So let's move to some of the other modules. The paint module. The paint module is essentially a raster based or a vector based. I know it has history. Can you explain how the paint works?
Well, the paint module, it's again, it's really geared towards dust busting and restoration and that type of thing in its current state. We didn't add tools for creative painting, like creating motion graphics, for example, and such things. That's going to be added in the future, probably. But the initial need for DI users, especially, is to have a tool that they can use to retouch clips and remove dust, scratches, blotches, whatever you may have on your scans. And obviously, it has, I would say, pretty much all the tools you can find in Photoshop, including clone, reveal, and some funky tools like twirl and pinch and punch and spherize and all these things. And includes also all the blending modes you have in Photoshop. The only difference is that our paint is working on those high resolutions in real time and without any need for proxies, so you can really do your frame-by-frame or automated painting on your clips without any problem.
So I can do, you list obviously 32-bit float and HDR. Can I do HDR painting?
Yes, you can. The system handles from 8 to 32-bit float included. So if you work with OpenEXR, for example, files, you can load them into the system and paint in HDR without any problem and use all the effects and 32-bit float. And that's true for all the modules. It's the same for color grading. If you have, if by chance you have a clip that has been rendered or shot with HDR cameras, then you can easily grade that and add it into your timeline and mix it with 10-bit or 16-bit scans. That's no problem.
So, Dan, you're doing yourself a bit of a disservice there, because I think you're actually going further than paint and then Photoshop in many of those areas.
Well, yes, because we need to, most of the high-end compositing and effects are right now done in HDR, because you can control light and lighting effects with much more power than with fixed precision. So Photoshop, it's definitely a good tool, but it's still a tool for still images, photographs, and at the end you're supposed to print your photograph on something. Our system is really geared towards movie creation, so to speak, and the more and more the HDR is employed in compositing, and I'm pretty sure it's going to come to grading as well, so it is necessary to have that precision. Also, when you start adding effects on your clip, 32-bit float, it's really a must-have, because the way the effects combine together gives you much more control on the actual quality of the effect. I would take a very simple example. Say you have two layers of effects on your clip, and one brings the brightness to its maximum, and the other one just brings the brightness to its minimum, to black, say. Normally, in the real world, these two effects should cancel each other's effects, and you should have your normal image back. So if you don't have a 32-bit float pipeline, which is HDR, this will never happen. You'll only have white image and then suddenly going to gray and down to black, and you'll lose all the precision you have in the image.
Well, that is absolutely true. And you were just on the paint. I'm going to come back to, there's a lot to ask you about, because it's fascinating. Just on the paint, though, for a second, you were talking about dust busting. Is there any automated tools for doing that? In other words, are there any tools for doing, dirt detection by either some kind of optical flow or inter-frame analysis?
Yeah, that's the new set of tools we're about to release at IBC. Obviously, optical flow based to detect per pixel motion, and based on that, you can detect almost any type of blotch and scratch if it has a short duration in time. Now, there are situations where those techniques do not work properly, and we also added a module to automate this by handling, for example, the new infrared pass from scanners. So if you have access to such a scanner, if you can get the material scanned with infrared pass, you can automatically remove these the dirt from the scans. But ultimately, you need to have, again, this famous paint tool, because none of the technologies are perfect. So at the end, it's always the operator that would have to give the final touch to the image.
Let me just explain that for those people that aren't familiar with it. The infrared scanning that you're talking about is something that happens at the scanner before it hits your product. And what happens is if the film is exposed to, say, infrared, then what's going to happen is that any dust on it will be detected, whereas, of course, it won't be detected with the RGB in the image. It doesn't come through, of course. And so you basically get a particularly perfect map of where the dust is, and that's an extra pass or extra set of metadata that comes out of the scanner. And then if you're taking advantage of that, that means that you have effectively an optical detection in addition to any mathematical optical flow to doing your dust busting.
Well, that's very true. Like in this new DI world, basically any tool you can have in your hand would be helpful to finish the project. So IR scan, it's not perfect, but it solves like probably 80% of the cases. Also, for example, if your film has these defects printed in it because it was a copy of an old film or something like that, obviously the IR will not detect these things. So, but you still have the defect on the image. So, at some point, any tool we provide in the system can be used just to make sure that you can fix the problem. So should it be IR pass or mathematically based with optical flow detection or manually repaired? Anything is employed to correct the image.
So let's go back now to the discussion about HDR, because the HDR aspect of the product really is a compositing effects aspect, because it isn't exactly the case that most film scanners are putting out anything much other than Cineon files.
Right.
So you've obviously got a pretty heavy-duty compositing package in this sucker in addition to all the DI stuff we've been discussing.
Well, it's something that maybe it sounds weird in the beginning, because when you say DI, today people mostly think about color correction, which in my opinion, it's a bit wrong, because all of the users at some point would have to fix the problem, even if the shots they work with are pretty much finished. There is always the last minute change and last minute fix. So since we have this compositing engine from the previous versions, we just added support for hardware into it, for hardware rendering, and now it's included in the package, and it gives a lot of helpful tools for the operators when they need to just overlay probably some sort of title, or just do a bit of compositing to arrange the shot because there is a last-minute change. So if you think of our system as a finishing system, and if you think about all the problems that may occur at the finishing stage, it's very handy to have a full-featured compositing tool in there.
So you touched there on hardware rendering, and that's a really important point about the Matrix, isn't it? It's the GPU algorithms and hardware manipulation that gives you performance that's so impressive.
Well, GPU, it's one of the hardware components that we use. It's not the only one. We have a bunch of other processors in the machine that help the GPU to speed up the calculations on the frames, but definitely the GPU is intensively used. Actually, we not only use the graphics card for processing the images. We have engineered the whole interface around it, so the whole interface reacts very, very quickly, and it's all hardware based, so we're not using anything from the underlying host subsystem.
So what is the underlying host system?
Well, initially we had a Windows 2000 operating system as a host, which you basically just use to start up the application, and then the application takes control of whatever is in the system. Now at this IBC, we'll introduce our Linux version, and by NAB next year, all the systems will be Linux-based only. The reason for it is because integration in a DI workflow is much, much easier with Linux, and also this will give us the ability to add more hardware capabilities in the system and make it even more powerful.
Linux is great, and for all the reasons you explained, but it does come at the cost of a few little things, like QuickTime.
Well, there is a couple of solutions for that to import and export QuickTime. I would say this, if you're planning to use specific codecs for QuickTime, or that would be the case for AVI, by the way, like some compressed type of codecs, like DVC Pro and that type of thing, you may have problems in this case, and then we'll still have the Windows version. However, that's not really the case in a system like ours, because it's really meant to work on huge files like 2K and 4K uncompressed. So those compressed QuickTimes will probably be left to another smaller system.
True, but there's still the issue of just getting
in. They have like a station dedicated to coding and decoding these things in their facility, because they have this problem with all the systems around should be Final Cut or Avid Media Composer or DS. Like, not all systems handle all the codecs properly, so they usually have like a dedicated station that does its encoding and decoding.
Yeah, it's not a problem unique to you, but I mean, it is annoying not being able to open up QuickTime sent by a Final Cut editor, for example.
Well, the solution to that, as I said, it's quite simple. The generated version of the clip in Final Cut should have like a should be encoded with a specific codec, or then it's up to our client to just use the Windows version, which continue to support and enhance. So and on Windows, they can have the codecs as they come out from Apple.
So let's talk about the compositing side of things. We've already established that it's a 32-bit float, and it has a nodal-based compositing tree, doesn't it?
That's correct, yeah.
So is there any... I mean, there is a three-dimensional color... there is a three-dimensional compositing environment. Can you explain to me how that 3D compositing environment works in relationship to the nodal flow-based?
Well, each node is basically a process, and when you connect inputs to the node, those inputs are used in various ways. So if I take a very simple over operator, you would just have your two images overlaid on top of each other. In the case of the 3D node, what happens is that the inputs are considered as textures for objects, and within the node you can create your quad objects, spheres, whatever, and then use the input, which is a 2D image, obviously, as a texture. And the 3D node has its own scene hierarchy and all these things, and it just uses the inputs as textures, texture the objects in the scene.
So let me give you a quick, sort of give me a yes or no on these items. What functionality is there in the 3D compositing sense? For example, do you have projectors?
Yeah, all these camera features are included, because that's what people expect from a 3D compositor.
What about 3D camera tracking?
We are adding now our 3D particle engine, which we had in as a separate product a couple of years ago. And but that's typically the kind of things that people expect from 3D compositor. It's not trying to we're not trying to compete against a 3D package like Softimage or Maya. That's really not the purpose of such a tool. It's really the ability to import cameras, for example, that have been generated by Buju and these types of software.
And Dan, is there...
And recreate the 3D environment and you know, apply projections to your layers and that type of stuff.
Dan, is there a 3D tracking solutions? Is it just 2D tracking or is there 3D tracking?
There is no 3D tracking integrated right now. We mostly rely on data we import from Buju, for example. And for now, there is no 3D tracking plan. Like, we have a lot of features to add on our own, but you never know.
And in terms of future. In terms of plugins, it's an OpenFX. Those are the plugins that you use.
Yeah, we exclusively rely on OpenFX because it's a modern and reliable and widespread and high end standard for plugins. We will not go into the After Effects host and other type of hosts for plugins. OpenFX is really giving us access to you know, Foundry's plugins. Now there is also Primat from Photon, and a couple of others are on the way.
And when I'm in that node,
all the high-end plugins will be available sooner or later on an OpenFX host.
And what keyers do I have?
Sorry?
What sort of keyers do I have?
Oh, the keyers. Well, right now we have a bunch of built-in keyers, which is obviously all the linear RGB HSL and YUV keyers. And they work pretty well. They're hardware-based, so the keying speed it's extreme, even at very high resolution, like 2K and 4K. Now, if you need a more powerful keyer, you would have to rely on Primat or Keylight, for example, from the Foundry.
But are you using one of those keyers as your secondary path for your color correction?
Yeah. Yes, you can use those plugins in the secondaries as well. So they just appear in the list, and you select them, and that's it, basically. Yeah.
So if I go for a second...
Sorry to interrupt. Obviously... those plugins for now do not take advantage of the hardware. So, but there, I know there is plans in the future to have extension for that. But for now, they would switch down to software to key the image.
So, if I go to adjust the secondaries in the color correction, do I pick a keyer, or is that just there's just a secondary option?
It's a secondary option. So, in the secondaries, you have 12 secondary slots, which you can consider as layers, which for now are sufficient for most of the jobs. And each of them has a keyer, well, actually a choice of keyers. You can select from about five keyers right now, not including the plugin keyers. And they are just part of the secondary.
And in the animation timeline stuff, there's a unique update time feature. What's that?
Well, it's a couple of tools that are part of the animation panel where you actually manipulate the curves, and it helps the operator to set keyframes very quickly. That's the purpose of that. It's really an interface thing to speed up the workflow.
So let's just, looking at it overall, this does seem to be something, if I could just jokingly suggest this to you, the product obviously is very much its own user interface, but in many respects it isn't far off, you know, what would happen if you crossed a luster with a toxic and made it look like a flame.
Well, it resembles to these products, and it's not a will from our part to copy and paste the user interface. It wasn't really the purpose. The overall look, it's quite similar, I admit that, but it's a will of the operators and users we talk to.
Because, I mean, it's got the Quantel Henry.
If you sit on the front of the two systems, you'll realize within seconds that there is a lot of differences in the philosophy, in the way you use the media, and the way you color grade. All these things are very, very different. But I admit from the screenshots, you may say that it's similar because you have all the commands at the bottom part of the screen and the image in the upper half of the screen. So, but the comparison stops there.
So it's the Quantel Henry or Harry principle of having menus in a fixed location so that you can move quickly, as opposed to a pop-up window kind of paradigm where you're never quite sure where any button's going to be. Is that correct?
Yeah, well, again, this is something that operators want, especially for such a system. They have to realize that the operators are working with the client. So the ultimate boss is the client, their client, and this person expects the operator to operate the machine as quickly as possible and react as quickly as possible to whatever happens. And because all this costs money, so they can't afford to watch somebody playing with buttons and flying windows and such sort of things on the screen. You have other tools for that that can be used without the client sitting next to you. But when you have the client sitting next to you, you have to be quick because the guy is paying money for the job. And we made this choice to have this type of interface where it's true that the buttons always appear in the same position, so the navigation is very easy, it's very logical also. And once you control the application properly, and that happens within 2 or 3 days max to navigate across all the options, you can basically just do it blindly, like close your eyes and click on the button. It's very easy.
So it sounds astounding. There's a new stuff to show at IBC, and obviously we're talking to you now as a prep for the IBC. So what would people expect, and where can they find you at IBC, and what will we be showing at IBC?
Well, they can find us on two different booths. One of them is CTM Debris, and the other one is Bluefish, which is one of our partners. And they're both situated in the same hall, like about 50 meters from each other. And they can see the beasts working there, and we'll demonstrate all the features and obviously the new features as well. And for all of the people that can't go to IBC, we'll definitely attend the NAB next year again, and they'll be able to see the new version by then.
It's obviously a standalone system in the sense that a Flame, a Socrato, or a 5D system was. So it's not necessarily a cheap software solution. Can you give us an indication on pricing?
Well, you're correct. The system it's not that cheap. We have two versions. One it's handling up to 2K, and the other one is handling up to 4K. The 2K system, it's 200,000 euros, and the 4K system, it's 300,000 euros. That's quite expensive, definitely, but it's the type of tool necessary to handle big files, and has all the hardware inside to render all these things possible. Also, we're introducing a couple of I would say lighter systems, which are less expensive, and that's going to happen at IBC this year as well. And these systems are only dedicated to specific tasks like color correction and editing, for example, or film restoration. So we'll have a couple of dedicated systems which are less expensive, and people can have several seats without ruining their budget.
So tell me, how long has the actual 2K, 4K systems been out, and how many are there? Where are they installed worldwide? Who's using them?
Well, the 2K system has been released last year. Within 3 months, we had five systems sold, and now we just sold another couple of systems before IBC. And the 4K system has been released in just after NAB, which was in June, I think. There is one actually running.
Well, it's been great to get a breakdown from you, and we really appreciate your time. I know you're flat out getting to IBC, so we really appreciate you taking a chance to talk to us.
Thanks a lot.
On the website, we'll put up some screen grabs and some views of the product, if that's all right with you. And then hopefully hopefully we can follow up after IBC and just clarify a few of the things that you've just hinted at.
Well, definitely, I think that the best for your readers is to have a look and compare and see by themselves if what I said is true or not.
So I'll let you get back to a sunny Sunday afternoon of preparing for a trade show in Switzerland. Thank you so much for talking to us today.
Thanks a lot for your time, Mike.
Well, thanks, guys, for that. I look forward to checking that out at IBC this coming weekend. Well, that's it for this week. We've got a lot of interesting stories coming up here on Effects Guide. I know I'm going to be taking a look at the new Flame Effects release. It's called Flame 2007, as well as a look at an interesting software product from Gridiron that really helps you speed up interactivity and speed up rendering within After Effects for multiprocessor machines. So until next week, be sure to check out our site over IBC. Be sure to check out fxphd.com as well. For Jeff Huser and Mike Seymour, I'm John Montgomery. Thanks for listening.
Thanks for listening to this week's FX Podcast. Please let us know if you have any suggestions for stories or future podcasts. You can reach us by using the Contact Us links at the top of the homepage. This podcast is copyright 2006 FX Guide LLC. Broadcast or redistribution is prohibited without the expressed written consent of FX Guide LLC.